to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and the knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We're on the air Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We do stream live at richarddugan.com, so all you have to do is go to the upper right-hand quadrant, I'll call it. You'll see my face. You'll see the guy wearing the hat. That's where you click. Pop that, and away you go to the player, and you'd be able to listen to the program as it airs live on the radio station. And you can also go to the podcasts. They are located on the homepage as well, below that area. Actually, it's below the space that we have set aside for those who would like to support the work that we are doing. The work that we are doing is we're trying to find those new ways of living. We're trying to basically come up with the new paradigms for a new world so that things work for all of us, not just a select few. Whether that's consciously or unconsciously, we don't know. But nonetheless, we would like for everybody to benefit. So that's why we ask if you can support us in some financial way. We're greatly appreciative of that. And also, you can scroll further down on the homepage and you will see the iTunes link. Those are the podcasts from 2018. And when we get to 2019, we'll have another section you'll be able to scroll down to see those and listen to those interviews on SoundCloud as well as iTunes. And we are also going to be linked to our guest's website. We'll be sharing that with you in just a moment. So we hope that you will avail yourself of the guest's website and information. We certainly hope that you can be a part of this transformational work that is going on around the world, quite literally. Today, we're going to be dealing, today is health class, is what it is. It's going to be far sight better, I think, than what maybe most of us experienced in school, in grade school or high school. And we're going to learn an awful lot today about a lot of different things. We're going to learn about miracles. Yes, indeed, we are. We're going to learn about how our guest has basically, he's helped to achieve dramatic healing results for conditions that Western medicine has deemed irreversible or terminal, including advanced heart disease, as well as breast cancer. And working with our guest's patients has often been able to reverse trends towards disease on a spiritual level before the disease has manifested in the physical body, which brings to mind something that I want to talk with our guest about to start with. I was working with another gentleman, and we were dealing with the same kind of thing, dealing with vibrations and so forth and so on. And he had a very unique method, but spoke about how every one of us has the, and this is the word that was used, the potential for certain diseases, and that his method would help to counter those potentials to some degree. Doesn't mean that you are immune from them. It just means that, yes, it is possible that you could have this particular disease. We're going to find out about that from our very special guest here on the program, Dr. Ibrahim Jaffe. He is, well, I guess the best way to put it is that you are a spiritual healer. You're the founder of the Medical Spiritual Healing, and you have a university as well in the same by the same name. And you also hail from a, shall we say, a Sufi philosophy. Welcome to our program. Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm delighted to be here, Richard, and happy to talk about, you know, spiritual healing and how it relates to the your audience out there.
Well, I know that in conversations we've had on this program over the years, much is said about the aspect, maybe the best phrase is as above, so below, and as below, so above. But even more pointedly, as it is within, it is without. And for example, we go through these seasons on the planet. Right, you know, at this particular point in time, we're coming to the end of what is called the hurricane season. And in different parts of the world, they're named by a different name, cyclone or hurricane, or typhoon, I guess. And then, of course, here in the Western Hemisphere, on the northern part of the planet, we call them hurricanes. But it is said that with these kinds of events, as well as the, shall we say, the man-made life challenges, shall we say, that if we would but take a look inward, we would find areas within our lives that are in that kind of turmoil, if you will, or upheaval. And that's what we need to deal with in order to better understand and deal with those things that are going on the outside. And it sounds to me like the work that you are doing, kind of, does it look at it in that kind of context?
Yeah, 100. I mean, I think you've nailed it 100%.
Well, it's been a great interview. Thank you so much for please. Okay, but from the Sufi perspective, how does all of this unfold? And maybe what we should do, instead of answering that question, maybe we should introduce people to the Sufi philosophy, its origins, if you can. And we've got plenty of time. We're just starting out the interview. So I would encourage you to take the time needed to share with our listeners and educate us, educate me, about what is Sufism, where does it come from, and what are some of its tenets, and so on and so on and so on. So please share with us, Dr. Jaffe, about that.
Okay, good question. So Sufism is actually an Arabic word. It means to purify. And a Sufi is one who has purified mostly their heart, but we really say the heart, the soul, the spirit has been purified. And in a state of purification, a Sufi becomes a mirror for the light of God. So the light of God mirrors on their heart. And what that means is that they reflect the holiness or the beauty or the wonderment or the, you know, the compassion and the mercy that is divinity, and it gets reflected inside of them. So we don't, you know, you don't become God, but you become this person who becomes so pure inside that you become a reflection of the oneness itself. And then that's the goal of Sufism, is to reach that state of purity. Now, Sufism began, you know, it's actually not really clear, but most Sufis say they begin with the prophet Abraham, and that Abraham was the first Sufi, and that he brought, you know, as a prophet, he was living in a, you know, what we would call today a very high state of Sahaj Samadhi, this very, very high state of enlightenment. And that in that state of enlightenment, he was able to receive, you know, these direct revelations from God, and that his system of learning, if you will, came directly from God itself. And in all prophetic traditions, meaning in Islam and in Christianity, Judaism, there is an inner and outer aspects. In other words, many of the people were not able to understand the inner spiritual, mystical side of things. So what the prophets did is they brought through a teaching for the outside, which had to do certainly with certain levels of dogma and understandings. And that became what in time became Islam or Christianity or Judaism. But on the inner, there was also these inner revelations of how to move the heart and the soul back to oneness with God, to reach this, that we, you know, in Sufism we say unity. In some systems they say, you know, enlightenment, you know, self-realization. There's different names for it. But that the system was the walking of the heart back into the state of unity with God, as opposed to just the mind or the consciousness. It was bringing the heart back into unity with God. So in all prophetic traditions, meaning, you know, today, of course, you have, you know, Abrahamic, and you have, you know, Christianity and Judaism and Islam, but there are other ones. But in all prophetic traditions, the goal is the purification of the heart through love, to return the heart and the soul back into that state of oneness with God. And this is essentially what we're doing here today.
How did this start for you? Maybe first of all, how did you become introduced to the Sufi philosophy? And then let's go into the whole aspect of this concept of spiritual healing from the Sufi perspective. We got two milestones to talk about here. So how did you first get introduced to Sufism?
Well, I've been a spiritual seeker, you know, since I was a young kid, and went to India and Japan and different places, seeking, really enlightenment, but mysticism and just trying to understand, who am I really? And unfortunately, when I was in my early 30s, I opened up a healing school. I was working with healing at the time, energetic healing. And for some reason, unbeknown to me, I picked up probably a virus that affected my heart. And my heart started to go into failure. So I started to essentially die at about 34 years old, and I was in my death process. So, I was applying the energetic healing methods, which I had used successfully on a lot of people, but in my case, it didn't work. And the medicine wasn't really working. And I started, praying about it. What do you do with this? And the answer came to me in meditation that the issue was that I had not learned to love in the way I should have, and I needed to learn to love if I was going to heal my heart. So I began to look for the paths of love. And, you have bhakti yoga, which I looked into, didn't seem to fit quite right. Some of the Christianity, which I looked into, which was good, but I wasn't sure it was going to reach to the level where my heart disease was killing me. Eventually somebody mentioned the Sufis, which I had actually really very little knowledge of. And they said a great Sufi master was coming over from Jerusalem, and maybe I could meet him and he could heal me. So I flew out to meet him. He came come to the U.S., and I walked into the home where he was staying. And the first thing, he looked at me and he smiled, and then he said to me, my beloved, you're dying of heart disease. And he didn't know anything about me. And I said, that was like awesome. I said, how did you know that? And he says, well, when you go to Allah, Allah can show you anything about anybody. And I didn't know what Allah was, other than I was scared of it. And I said, tell me, what is Allah? He kind of looked at me like I was crazy. And I said, is Allah God? He said, yes, my beloved. He said, Allah is no different than God or whatever you want to call it. It's the same. So I said, you are able to connect to God, and you were able to get this kind of knowledge instantaneously. I said, because I haven't told you anything, and you knew I was dying within 3 seconds of my walking into your office. And he said, that's right. And I said, that's unbelievable. I said, can you go to God, and would you ask God if he can save me, because I'm dying and I need help, and I don't know how to do this, and I'm scared. And he said, yes. And he sat down with me, took my hands, went into a very deep meditational state for about 10, 15 minutes, came out, and he said, I had to travel very, very far to get your answers. But he said, the issue for you is that your spirituality comes through your mind. You've learned basically meditation. You've learned consciousness. You've learned how to expand and perceive, but you have not learned how to open your heart and to love other people. And you have not learned how to love and to care in the way that your heart is lagging behind your consciousness. And this ripping between your heart and your mind, your consciousness, is what's causing your disease. So I said to him, can you ask Allah, how do I heal this? And he said, yes. And he went inside for a few minutes, and then he came. He said, the way you need to heal this is you have to give up. You're going to have to give up your healing school. You're going to have to give up the meditation. You have to give up the way you've been doing your spirituality. And you're going to have to do it from your heart, not just from your consciousness, from your third eye. You have to do it from your heart. I said, fine. I'm dying. Teach me. I said, but one thing, you have to promise me that if I give everything to you, I've got 6 months left here. Can you heal me in these next 6 months? And he said, yes, if you trust me and if you listen to me and if you follow what I say. So that was, of course, back in 1997, 1996. This is now, going on, 20 years already. Mm-hmm. And obviously it worked. So I followed his prescription. Here I am today.
Either that or the six-month calendar is a little different in Sufism. You've got a lot longer to go, because 1 month is actually 47 years in Sufi time. often, as you will hear, read even from the Bible, for example, what is it? Years is a thousand day, a thousand years, and a thousand years is a day, or I don't know what the math is. But nonetheless, I'm glad that you are here. And I actually was thinking when you were quoting this gentleman that you were talking with, and you asked him, can you heal me? When his response was, yes, I can. What I didn't hear was him saying, yes, I can. It was because of his connection to the divine. That was what was going to heal him through him. What was going to heal you through him. He was going to be that conduit. But again, the terminology that obviously was used at the time sounds to me more like that than what we've had a lot in America with our televangelists and faith healers, that I can do it. I mean, they give God the glory and so forth, but somehow they become the instrument and they you know, get the ego all wound up. And I didn't get that as you were sharing that story. As a matter of fact, I remember reading, for example, in Paramahansa Yogananda's book, Autobiography of a Yogi, when he was asked, when he asked his guru to heal him, someone told me that he was actually talking to Lahiri Mahashai, and it was his guru who was talking to Lahiri, and says, someone told me that you can heal me. I said, no, you've been misinformed. I can't do it. Ah, but you have the connection. Ah, that's a different story. And so that's what I'm kind of gathering from what you are talking about, as well as what your university is about. Share with us a little bit about this university of spiritual healing.
Well, the University of
Medical Spiritual Healing.
Medical Spiritual Healing is a new creation. And the bottom line is that you're right, God is the healer. And miracles can flow from God, and sometimes they do, but more usually what you see is a slow, progressive transformation of people, and the disease disappears. It kind of slips away. So what I have found, doing this now for 30, 40 years myself, is that the secret is in what I call the divine teaching. In other words, that God is seeking for all of us to learn something spiritually. And that spiritual is a spiritual teaching at the deepest level of the soul. For example, God might want us to learn compassion or mercy or kindness or goodness or patience or something like this. These are called divine attributes. And that all disease that I have seen, and I mean all disease, and this is what's so wild, even things like accidents and things that happen to people, are actually teachings that are here for the person to be able to understand the divine messages that are coming to them so that they can open their spirituality to reach really into a state of deeper love and proximity and oneness to the One itself, and that this is the way that God does it for some people. In other words, it's different for everybody, but people who get sick, this is one of the avenues that God uses to what we say walk people. Mm-hmm. So, what is walking? Well, walking means that deep inside of the heart, unbeknownst to our conscious mind, there are blocks or restrictions, or we say veils, that limit the person's perception of the divine reality. So they go inside, you can go inside your heart, but you can only go so far, and you can't really reach the presence of the One inside your own heart because it's veiled because of life experiences that somehow have stopped you from that experience of unity or enlightenment that's living inside of you. Hmm. You see? Mm-hmm. So what God wants to do is God is trying to find a way of waking up all individuals to return, to that state of unity. So what God does is he sends down what we say the order. The order in this case might be for disease. So in that moment where before disease didn't manifest, once the order comes down, disease shows up. So all of a sudden, a person's been smoking for 20 years, they didn't have any cancer, but all of a sudden they do. Why? Something shifted inside that body. But at the highest level, the order came for them to have the experience that they needed to unveil this very deep place inside of their hearts. So now what happens in most cases, people don't know that. So what they simply do is they go in and, you know, they go into traditional allopathic care and they get chemo, radiation, whatever. And, you know, perhaps they get the cancer taken care of and perhaps they don't. But in the spiritual way, what we do is we go in and we say, wait a minute, if God is sending this down and he wants to teach us something with this cancer or whatever it may be, what is the teaching? Once we understand that, we say, for example, let's say God wants us to learn to love, like I did in my case with my heart disease, then we say, well, what's veiling that love in the heart? And all of a sudden we say, oh, I see. Well, when I was 3 years old, my father, you know, hurt me, beat me up, or he judged me, or he condemned me, or some such thing. That pain to that child was incredible. That pain was internalized inside the heart, became a veil to the love itself. So in Sufism, what we do is we use our connection to God, like this happened with the Sufi master, to show the veils in our hearts that are specifically related to, you know, what God is trying to teach us. And then we open those veils up. And as those veils open, we find the hidden issues inside the person. Okay, my father judged me. I shut down. I didn't believe he loved me. I cut off from the love. I didn't trust the love. I projected that onto God. I don't trust God anymore. I don't trust anybody anymore. Then I got married, but I didn't really believe in love, but I needed the marriage because I needed to be intimate with someone, but really I don't trust love. Now I've been in marriage for 20 years and I can't really love somebody. And all these things come together and they form this blockage in the heart or the blockage in the lung. And then all of a sudden somebody gets sick.
It's amazing. you know, there's the other thing too that I find interesting. You used the, you know, you talked about how even accidents that come along, and I have been saying for decades that there are no coincidences. There are, however, coincidences. Things, events that happen, as the term is supposed to imply, but that it's not an accident. There's a reason why it happened. Again, that whole aspect of, for example, the law of attraction is a fair assessment of that. When we come back from our break, we'll go ahead and dive into that whole aspect with what you were talking about, working on this. I'm assuming it was named after some guy by the name of Hashimoto from Japan. That's usually how some of these get their names. And we'll talk about that, and I'll let you do whatever it is that you are going to do in that regard, and we'll give people an experience in that regard. I have to say that working as I did for 15 years for a Christian radio station, I came to this realization, Dr. Jaffe, that I know a lot of people are concerned about privacy. I get that. I can appreciate that as individuals seeking their life and liberty and so forth. But the theory I came up with was this, that if God is omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent, by whatever name you choose to call him or her or it, God already knows everything. So what difference does it make if, at the present moment, 7.6 billion other people know about it, and most of them don't care? So I don't have a problem with discussing that in that regard. So we'll do that when we get back here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. I hope you'll stay with us.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story. We are talking with Dr. Ibrahim Jaffe, and we are talking about the Sufi religion, if you will. I like to refer to them as more philosophies, Dr. Jaffe, than using the word religion per se, because that's really kind of what they are. It's a philosophical look at the world in which we live from that particular perspective. But we're also talking about spiritual healing. I've been a metaphysician, as I like to call it, since I was about 17, and I read my first real spiritual book, I call it my primer, Autobiography of a Yogi, which introduced me to the concepts and ideas from the East. And of course, some would say, well, yeah, it kind of depends upon which way you go. You know, if you go from Los Angeles across the Pacific, it's to the West. Yeah, well, needless to say, it's all from my perspective doing these programs as long as I have been that they're all basically the same. There is that thread, that golden thread that is woven through all of the philosophies that teaches us that there is the divine, that we are so desperately, even if it's unconscious or subconsciously, wanting to connect to, knowing that that's in, if you will, that's our home, you know? And yep. And we know that's where we're going to be going back to, and it's nowhere, it's where we came from, which of course frustrates me to no end in this life, because it's like, well, wait a minute, why are we here? Why don't we just stay with the one? Wouldn't it just be such a warm and cuddly better thing than to have to go through this whole mess? But obviously, you know, apparently, in spite of the fact that we're with the one and he's omnipresent, omniscient, and omnipotent, I guess there's still stuff to learn, which seems a little amazing to me. But again, I'm not going to understand it all. Let's talk a little bit, as you mentioned, and one of the conditions that you have dealt with, and as I said, I have been diagnosed with, although apparently my numbers, the last blood test that I took back in, I think it was last summer, showed that it was either stable or the numbers were down where they're closer to where they're supposed to be. I haven't done anything. I've not had any treatments. I've taken no medications for it. I didn't even know I had it until they ran the blood work. I remember them doing that when they diagnosed me with high blood pressure. Ooh. And I said, well, you guess what? You're not going to find the answer in the blood. And they didn't. I said, it's not in my blood. It's in my head. so I also need healing to find that peace of mind. But what about this aspect of, in this case, as we were talking, Hashimoto's disease? It's an issue with the thyroid, right?
Yeah. The thyroid, you know, is the metabolic center. It sets your metabolism. Your metabolism is like your engine. How fast does it run? Is it running at 10 RPMs or 1,000 RPMs? That's your metabolism. And let's say the metabolism is supposed to run, let's say, at 100. But in the Hashimoto's, it's not initially, it kind of can go either way, but as time goes on, you get hypothyroidism, which is it slows down, the person gets more tired, they get more sluggish, many people get depressed. You know, there's all sorts of issues that come out based on a low thyroid. And, you know, in traditional medicine, there's, you know, you supplement, when you give a, you know, you replace the thyroid hormone. There's no real treatment for it. It's autoimmune based. You know, in other words, the immune system is striking out against the thyroid. And what it does is it essentially incapacitates the cells, and the body doesn't turn out the thyroid. So the person becomes hypothyroid. And this is endemic today. This Hashimoto's is becoming very, very big deal. In other words, they're saying as many as 2 out of 10 people, sometimes even say higher, are having Hashimoto's, and in women even more, that it's a very, very common issue for women today. So what, you know, we've worked with Hashimoto's a lot and had tremendous success with it. So in other words, we have a number of people who have started treatment with us, and they have no immune globulin, they have no, their thyroid numbers are perfect. So what happened in those cases of healing? Well, I'll tell you, it's very simple. Hashimoto's disease is about people not speaking their truth. And it's about people not knowing what that truth is. So, you know, here, a guy like you, Richard, you know, you obviously, you know, have done a lot of work on yourself. You're much more enlightened than, you know, most people I talk to, in the sense of aware of your, you know, many things. But so you could say, well, how could he not know his truth? You know, and plus he's a, you know, he speaks on the radio. He obviously knows how to speak. But if you have Hashimoto's, it says that you don't, that there's some place deep inside that hasn't been realized. And see, where I go with that would be, you know, for somebody in your situation would be that that there's a level of consciousness in your own self that you're not speaking from. In other words, that for whatever your reason, you might be afraid to really speak the depth of wisdom and understanding that's moving through you. Mm. So you see what I'm saying? So you might,
yeah.
You might be missing that piece.
You know, I was in an interview just recently. We were talking about the various institutions around the world, whether they be religious, educational, governmental, political, economic, et cetera, et cetera. And when we were talking, a New Testament biblical passage came to mind. And it was kind of weird because I'm not afraid of reading passages from the Bible or any other holy book or any other what I like to call ancient wisdom teaching. But what came to mind was a passage from, I think it was Matthew chapter 6, and it was in the 20s as far as the verses. But what it had to do with was we were talking about the economy. We were talking about economic systems. And I read this passage about how we are, Jesus is talking to his disciples and talking to these people about, you know, well, look at the birds. You know, they don't, you know, work 9 to 5 and, you know, take a break for lunch and do this kind of stuff. They don't work hard and whatever, and yet they're taken care of. They don't toil or spin or do this or that or the other, and yet there's food and they don't need clothing. They've got their shelter and this and that and the other thing. So why worry about that stuff? Because you're going to be taken care of. And I read through the whole thing about 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 verses of that particular chapter. And when I was finished, I asked my guest, I says, is there anywhere in that which Jesus spoke of in the new covenant, meaning the old covenant is it's been fulfilled. The contract has been fulfilled. It's complete. Set it aside. Now we have this new contract. Okay. Anywhere in that passage, those passages where free enterprise and capitalism are a part of the mix? And he says, no. And I said, well, then, how is it that Christians, because Christians would be the ones following Jesus and his message, how is it that they can be so supportive of a system that is not sanctioned by God? Now, this is an observation of mine. I'm not opposed to capitalism and free enterprise from that standpoint, from the standpoint of that's the system that we live under, and so that's what we have to work with. My point was trying to open up my mind as well as others to the understanding that, you know, we've made these assumptions about our lives, and you have kind of said this, and it does go to what you just stated about, you know, speaking one's truth. I mean, there are things that I see things differently than other people. I get wound up and frustrated and what have you, just like everybody else too, over sometimes the worldly things that go on.
But you know, again, Richard, this very principle you're talking about is a very classic Sufi principle.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a classical mysticism in any, whether it's Kabbalah or the scene or, mm-hmm. or whatever system is. You know, you're talking about very, very, very deep truths about the world. And then at the same time, then you're saying, you know, you're confronting the materialistic system of the Western world or the whole world at this point.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal. You know, you're taking on a major system when you say things like that.
Yeah. And if that's the system you want to live under, whoever you are listening, I have no opposition to that. People have to make their own choices. But what's frustrating in these times in which we live, and I have to say I'm getting a little frustrated with that phrase, times in which we live. It doesn't matter what decade it is, they are the times in which we live, you know. But, you know, you sit there and I sit there and I ponder this stuff. And then things that I learned from people that I admired, who I looked up to, whose books I read, whose interviews that I conducted and so forth, these phrases, these ideas come back into my mind. And I'm going, oh, wait a minute, somebody over here said this. Or I remember reading here, like in the New Testament. Or, for example, I don't know if you deal with this particular element in medical spiritual healing or not, but there's another concept from the biblical times about where he's doing all these miracles and the apostles are going, wow, that's pretty cool. Hey, could we do that stuff? I paraphrase. This is not King James. And he basically says, oh, sure, you betcha. But you guys are going to do greater things. I mean, raising of the dead and water to wine and all that kind of stuff. My point is this. There was a rule that was laid down in the New Testament that Paul says it is appointed for every man once to die, and then the judgment. Well, already in the New Testament, there's a violation of that rule. Lazarus. Now, did he die? Was he actually dead and he was raised from the dead? So wait a minute. What's the rule? You get two shots? Have you had any experiences in this regard, or is that even a relevant question in regards to this whole aspect of medical spiritual healing that you have to be, your essence, your soul, your spirit, has to be residing in the vehicle in order for you, Dr. Jaffe, to assist them in their healing?
Well, I mean, these are, you know, amazingly broad questions, but you know, if you go back, first of all, to yourself, and we just talk about Hashimoto's for a moment, mm-hmm. It, you know, for you to maybe heal your Hashimoto's, if you allow your voice to carry these questions out and you jump into the depth of them and you confront them full on, probably your Hashimoto's will go away.
I will bet you that with the last blood results and the fact that he didn't mention anything about it, that it's probably in that, I'm probably in that phase. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, again, I have sisters. I've got one sister who has had issues. I don't know that it was Hashimoto's, but it was something to do with the thyroid. And I don't know if she's taking meds or not or what the deal is. And I also know, too, that my wife was dealing with an issue with an enlarged thyroid or a thyroid that is a little larger than it's supposed to be. Is that along the same lines or is that something else?
No, that's similar. That's a hypothyroidism.
Hypothyroid. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Very good. So when somebody comes to you. Now, when you went to this, please tell me, who was this gentleman that you went to initially when you were younger?
His name was Sidi, and he was the he was head of the Higher Sufi Council in Jerusalem at the time, mm-hmm. and was considered one of the great Shatiliya Sufi masters. He was, you know, what they would call a pole or a, you know, sort of the head. You know, very high master in that tradition, mm-hmm. that came from the West.
And what was the title? Shatiliya?
Shatiliya.
Shatiliya. That's a great, yes. I like the sound of that. That's very neat. And it sounds to me like there are different
tarikas,
sects, if you will, of Sufism. Yeah. Is that a fair assessment or a phrase?
It's true. Okay. There's probably hundreds, but there's more or less five or six major ones. You know, when I say major, I'm talking about, you know, 100, 200, 300 million people following it. And Shatiliya is probably the largest of them. And it kind of stems out of Morocco and spread across the world. And people practice it all over the world today. And it's essentially, you know, a very clear spiritual path that, you know, leads directly to the presence of God and then teaches people, you know, how do I actualize that presence in every part of my life, and that's what Shatiliya Sufism is. It's teaching the actualization of the divine presence.
So, in general, Sufism, when and where was it founded, and by whom?
Well, Sufism is Sufism. Like I said, it started with Abraham. You know, it kind of went out of vogue, and it was brought back again, and a lot of people. Say that Jesus, when he went, you know, he disappeared for those years, was mm-hmm. actually under some Sufi tutelage at that time, because there's a fairly good knowledge of where he was. If you look at it, there's stories of where he was during that time. People do know. And then following that, it was picked up again by the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, and he. He didn't really revive Sufism, but what he did is when the revelations began moving through him and he, you know, brought in this outer religion of Islam, which became, you know, Quranic based, but he also brought in a secret inner tradition, which was the mystical side of reaching this level of oneness with God. And that at the time was there, it was hidden. The people around him knew about it. There were people that were being trained in it. It was not so much put in the public eye. It wasn't hidden, but it wasn't really out there. And then later, after his death, there, you know, as all cases, you know, the forces come in that try to institutionalize and control and you know, dominate the religion, which happened. And they tried to cut the mystical side of it out, which they did. And essentially, they got rid of that part of it. So within a few hundred years of the prophet's death, the religion of Islam became institutionalized, and it became more of a dogmatic religion. However, the secret teachings of that became Sufism were being passed down in hidden places. Those teachings eventually came to light a few hundred years later, where they had been practiced in secret because the people were being killed. And once it came to light, there were some very great Sufi masters who re-brought in the Sufi teachings, re-brought them out, and the Sufism was born as, quote-unquote, you know, a separate thing. But really, in reality, Sufism were the secret teachings that this prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, brought through. But it's no different than what, in a way, were the secret teachings of Jesus or the secret teachings of Muhammad, Moses, or all the way back to Abraham. If you study Kabbalah, you study, you know, some of the Essene teachings, you'll see that essentially they're really the same teachings. There's not a lot of differences in the deepest level.
I have to say that my time in the crucible of Christendom radio, I got the impression that many Christians believe that Christianity came out of a vacuum somewhere. And I find it fascinating. No philosophy comes out of a vacuum. It always is like a progress. The whole philosophical stream, it's a progression from one century to the next. I was, for about a year and a half back in the 90s, I was a member of the Baha'i Faith. And I think one of my favorite sayings of theirs was, if you accept one of the messengers of God, you accept them all. And if you reject one of the messengers of God, you reject them all. And I find that so, so fascinating, in that you can't pick and choose. I mean, you certainly can choose to be a Christian or a Muslim or a Sufi or a Buddhist or whatever other philosophy you choose. But you also then must also respect the other philosophies. I'm hoping that you know, maybe we've enlightened people, because I'm trying now to get on this program's a representative of Rastafarianism. I have a dear friend, matter of fact, I was going to throw this out at you. I had a dear friend who contracted colon cancer, and it progressed when he was finally diagnosed. It had progressed to add to it lung cancer. Now, he being a Rastafarian, and I did some research on this, doesn't believe in doctors. So when he had the first pains, he just thought it was indigestion. And a year or two later, when he doubled over and his wife forced him to go to the hospital, that's when they found it. And that was last February. He just passed away on September 12th, 2018. Miss him a lot. We referred to each other as our, he would always, every time I would pick up the phone and call him and he would answer, "Hey, bald brother," because we both shave our heads. I trained him in this business back in the, I think late 80s. So we knew each other for a good 30 years. So I'm really curious, to maybe just get an idea from you, is it the dis-ease, or where the dis-ease is? For example, in my case, Hashimoto's has to do with the thyroid. It's not the Hashimoto so much as it is the thyroid that is the defining factor that you would then use, as you did, to define, okay, you're not speaking your truth. What is it about the colon and or, in his case, the lungs that this cancer affected? And there are people who have these conditions, and maybe being aware is like the first step. What can you share with us at this particular stage?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, the body is incredibly complex. I mean, it really is a supercomputer. Mm-hmm. You know, they know that today. It's moving at speeds, you know, beyond anything we have on the planet at this point. So from that point of view, the body is an interface between spirit, the soul, and the physicality and the personality of the person. So this body is scientific. It really has a direct science to it, which, you know, today we know it has chakras, we know that it has acupuncture meridians, you know, all these type of things have been very well mapped out in different systems around the world. But the interesting point about it is that the spiritual teaching, which I believe are the source of everything that happens to human beings, in other words, we're spirits that are trying to return back to God. We're spirits that are trying to return back to the world of unity. And that's the primary thing that's going on here. It's not our personalities getting what they want or our personalities, you know, having certain experiences. In fact, it's the spirit having those experiences through the personality, through the body, that is really what it's about. So when a person is being asked to learn something, like let's say in your case, learning to speak this deep truth that you carry, having the willingness to confront the powers to be, which, you know, who knows, you start going after that, you don't know what's going to happen to you. You know, if you choose to carry out, you know, those type of choices and you move forward with them, there's a science of these teachings. And those sciences are that all spiritual teachings are connected to different organ systems, cellular systems, aspects of the body. And when a particular teaching is not being realized, in other words, if you're supposed to be speaking your truth and you don't, and when you don't speak your truth, you may not realize it, but you close down the energy in your thyroid. You can, you know, I've heard it, you know, a few times on the call today that there are times that when you're speaking about very important things, I can feel that you've had to really struggle to bring out this wisdom that you carry inside of you for whatever the reasons are. So when we, for whatever reason, stop the flow of what we're supposed to be doing, mm-hmm. or what's natural to us to be doing or spiritually, this causes uncomfortableness inside of us. That's called dis-ease. It's lack of ease. It's lack of peace inside of our body. And it's scientific. So if you have colon cancer, the colon at the greater levels has to do with tribe. It has to do with your connection to tribe. And it particularly has to do with the connection of the inner child to tribe. So if for some reason the inner child is not feeling the love and the connection to the tribe, that usually becomes the source of where the cancer comes from. So if you're going to work with healing it, you've got to get back what went on, what's going on inside of your inner child, which still exists in all of us. We all have inner children. What's going on inside that causes that child not to feel loved, not to feel connected, not to feel wanted, not to feel valued? What's going on with the tribe? Is there something going on in that household, wife, kids, parents, in their community? Is it something to do with, you know, their tradition? You know, in this case, you know, if he's a Rastafari, was his Rastafarianism being accepted in the West? Was he losing his connection to it? Was there some kind of discord with it? Those are the places you'd have to look to work out why he had colon cancer.
It's interesting how when we start taking a look at the different parts of the human body, and you're absolutely right in your assessment that it's a supercomputer. I was going to jokingly say that, but I already have like six or seven of these processors running. probably 6 or 7 million of them in each of us kind of thing. Because I used to ask this question of my guests at the end of the program, how powerful are we as human beings? And I'm curious as to what your thought is in that regard. It seems to me like, you know, if we are the ultimate supercomputer, there's nothing we can't do.
Yeah, I agree with that. There's nothing we can't do, but there's a condition on that, which has to do with how conscious are we to be able to do it.
Ah, okay. That's the caveat.
That's the caveat.
This has been, quite honestly, just the most incredible interview. And it's like the last 5 or 6 interviews that I have done on this program, I didn't want to end. And unfortunately, we do have to bring them to an end just because of the nature of this business and the clock and all that good stuff. Dr. Ibrahim Jaffe, I am very grateful for not only information you've shared with me about my condition, but also with the information you've shared with our listeners. And I really would love to have you back on the program. I'm looking forward to, if we're able to get down to Los Angeles, to see you there at the Mystic. It's the Mystic Journey Bookstore.
Yes. Yeah, Mystic Journey Bookstore in Venice.
And we will give people information in regards to the special events that are upcoming. And again, we thank you so much for joining us. And should you find yourself on a slow boat to Santa Barbara, or maybe taking the train up this way, or however you want to travel, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation. And even if not, we will do so via Skype once again.
That's great, Richard. Well, thank you very much. It's really been my honor and my pleasure to be on your show, and I think you're doing great, great work, and I pray and hope that you keep really coming out with it and let people hear your voice.
I will do that. I'll let our listeners know once again, your website is drjaffemd.com. That's drjaffemd.com. That's drjaffemd.com. And before I let you go, I actually do have 3 other questions that I ask my guests at the end of our interviews. And you may have answered this in some fashion in during the program, but I'm going to ask them to you directly. Who is Robert Ibrahim Jaffe?
And, who I am is what I would say is simply somebody who is here to help bring forth, you know, the real message of divine presence and divine truth to the world, whatever, you know, your tradition or your background or who you are or what you believe. You know, that divine truth, if it comes forward, we're all going to have a better life together. So for me, I just consider myself somebody here who's kind of a purveyor of that message of divine truth. And of course, I am a Sufi, and in the Sufi tradition, I'm a Sufi guide or a murshid. And as a human being, I'm trained as a physician and a father of 5 kids, and a very happy person to bring just joy and goodness into the world, really.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
Well, bottom line, I think globally we're in a lot of trouble. I think that we're coming to a major, you know, crossroads of intersections where things are falling down, and that really the only way out of this is going to be the establishment of divine truth, you know, not necessarily through any particular religion or spiritual path, but divine truth as a whole that can be accessible to people in all religions. In other words, if you're Jewish and you can really connect to divine truth, it will shift your way of practicing Judaism. If you're Christian, it will shift your Christianity and so forth. So what I'm teaching is the Sufi way of reaching to that divine presence and divine truth, helping people to illuminate their lives. And I'd like to see that at a global level. And I'd like to see it particularly within medicine and within healing, because I think at the end of the day, all of us across the board, I don't care, you know, really what your backgrounds are, everybody has to struggle with illness and suffering at some time in their life. And that by learning these lessons in that place, it's really the greatest possibility for us to truly understand how to live way of love. So that's really my work.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
Well, my life's purpose is to bring this teaching the way the prophets brought it, and to serve the teaching that unfolds divine truth to the world, and to help all people to live in it, and to follow it, and to believe in it, and to be with it, again, within whatever tradition they want, but that they do it in a deep way. And what I truly believe is that when people reach the presence of God, they're actually all religions fall down, because the presence of God is the same. I call it the religion of unity. The light of God is no different in any tradition, because it's the same. So that what my hope is that all people will reach the religion of unity, reach God directly, and we'll see that actually we're all practicing the same religion worldwide. That's my hope.
Abraham, thank you so much for joining us once again. And I'll let our listeners know once again, it is drjaffemd.com. That's drjaffemd.com. We will be linked to your website, and we look forward to seeing you, Doctor, at the Mystic Journey Bookstore down in Los Angeles. And we will give people that information on the website as well. And again, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Richard. My pleasure.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love, Talal.